As gas prices rise, more focus will shift toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join FCA Bethesda and FCA Energy on May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy and the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, NOAA, and Interior to discuss energy efficiency, agency cooperation, and IT spending priorities. Register at FCABethesda.com/EEITday. Special thanks to premier sponsors Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Booz Allen Hamilton, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Michael Kane is the Chico for Energy, talking about recommendations for a new performance management system.
Director Barry is very direct. He expects us to get him a fairly detailed set of options and a project plan. We're going to break it down into a number of working groups that are going to work in parallel. So we're going to practice what we preach here. It's all about inclusion. It's all about getting diverse viewpoints.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about the significant signs you've been in the job too long and need a change. And to lead us in that discussion is Nan Seymour. And she is the founder of Breakers.
I am.
And there's another name there too, right? Breakers.
Well, it's Breakers Consulting on the email. So yes, it's Breakers Consulting because there's that pesky little hotel that keeps getting in the way of my company.
And yes. Then we're going there afterwards. And Nan is also a speaker for NITP, but she's a consultant and she does career transition planning and she does. Well, we're going to see all the stuff she does.
Right. I help a lot of people negotiate their way through one position into another and changing jobs, changing careers, starting their own companies, whatever it takes for them to be happy in the next phase of their life.
And she was in radio how many years ago?
I was. I guess I left radio in 95. I was in it for 15 years. That was my first career.
It won't be hard to tell after a few minutes that she was. And joining Nan and I is John Elliott, senior benefits strategist, co-host of the show. Good guy, retired Fed. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Nan.
Good morning, John.
All righty, Nan. Number one.
Okay.
Job security. I'm with the Feds, and I'm afraid to change job, or I'm concerned about going to another agency because
right.
I could be the first in and the first out if there was a riff.
I think that what we have to do is kind of set the stage a little bit here first with why do people join the federal government? What is the attraction? And it's often the trade-off for more money that they could make in the private sector by changing jobs more frequently for that job security. But the job security within the federal government doesn't mean you have to stay in the same job. In fact, a lot of people use the federal government, the getting in, and then they use it so that they can go to different jobs. Staying in one job too long is what we're talking about today. What are the warning signs that you've stayed in one place too long? And I'm going to give you a list of the top 10, starting, of course, with the 10th, which is it stops being fun. You start complaining too much. I did take that line from somebody right outside the studio who was saying it's still fun for me because in her position, she changes jobs a lot. She does a lot of different things. If you start getting to the point where you dread coming in and you're complaining to everybody around you, you've probably stayed too long.
Hmm. Sound familiar, John?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I changed agencies. I think I worked for about 7 agencies in my career. And half of that was with the one agency, but the other 5 or 6 were, you know, I think the longest lasted 4 years.
Yeah.
So, it can be good to move around. The downside is sometimes if you last long enough, you know, you are rewarded just because you're the last man standing, too. But that may not necessarily
I don't think that's the, yeah, I think it's, yeah, but that's a badge of honor. Is it really worth the blood that you've given and the sweat that you've given to get to earn that badge? That's the question that we have here today.
And if there are any questions from y'all listening, we're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's 10:10 a.m., March 21st, 2011. We're on till 10:57 and a half. So if you call after that time, don't, because we can't answer. But we'll give you an email later on. But right now, it's 202-465-3080. And you can ask us about what we're talking about, or you could take a tangent over to benefits or tax and finance if you like. But let's stay on the subject.
Yeah, and those will be not answered by me.
Okay.
Okay, number nine. And this is going to sound familiar to a lot of people. And by the way, the complaint thing, when you start, everybody knows somebody who's negative in the workforce and everything is complaining. When you look in the mirror and that person's you, that's what we were talking about. Number nine, you spend more time dealing with things that have nothing to do with what you're hired to do. You spend a lot of time going out on smoke breaks, spending time at the water cooler, doing other jobs for other people. It's almost like trying to avoid what you should be doing. You spend more time doing other things. Might be a sign you've been there too long.
Does that take into account, because I water the plants at work and I dust the broom and I dust the coat hangers.
You know what,
Bob? Is there a sign there, Nan?
You know, I do those things sometimes too when I'm trying to avoid doing things I'm supposed to be doing. Absolutely. It's avoidance. What you're trying to do is spend more time doing other things because you don't want to spend the time doing the thing that you have to do.
I actually had an experience, speaking of doing other things than I wanted to do, was actually I was not really as well versed in coming into a job, or I was misrepresented, I was doing something other than what I thought I should be doing or wanted to do, and so a little over a year I was out of there.
Yeah,
that's kind of rare, but well, you know, it happened to me at least.
We had Bill Bransford on last week, who's an attorney with Shaw Bransford, and we were talking about, and this ties in a little bit, you know, he's an attorney, so we talked about both sides of the fence, the manager and the employee. So let's say I'm an employee, I'm going to come to the manager and say, you know, this isn't getting it. And I don't want to take sick days, but I'm taking more sick days. Well, we haven't got to that.
Well, we haven't gotten that far on the list.
All right,
so
number 10.
I'm
at number 10, and I'm doing things other than what I should be doing.
Well, think about it this way. If you have an administrative assistant, and you're constantly looking for him or her because he or she is not at his desk like they're supposed to be, when they're always doing things that they're not supposed to be doing, that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
Okay, and number eight ties into that. If you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, there's a good chance that you will be taking work home. If you have to take home a lot of work, if you have to work a lot of overtime because you're not doing the things you're supposed to be doing, there's a good chance you might be overstaying your welcome in that job.
What if you're buried and the only way to get the job done?
You're hired to be there, unless you're management, unless you're one of those people that are hired on salary, you're hired to be there for 8 hours. If you aren't prioritizing your work properly, if you aren't letting the manager know this and this and this is what I can get to, you prioritize for me what you want done first. If you're taking a bunch of this stuff home, I actually had an employee of a government agency when I worked for the government years ago tell me that she was working an extra 20 hours a week. And I said, why are you doing it? And she broke into tears during that training session and said, because the place will close if I don't. Now, she's convinced that this entire federal operation will close if she doesn't work an extra 20 hours a week. We need a reality check.
We need an ego check.
Because government agencies never close, even after they've outlived their usefulness.
Well,
we
have to never say never. We've still got a continuing resolution going on.
Well, for a brief time.
I remember Annie Rooney had a great comment once, and this was well after the draft was over. And he says, does it really take $50 million a year to administrate a system that isn't functional? I'm talking about the Selective Service. Now, I'm not picking on the Selective Service. They still have to keep records.
Yes.
But it was
We're going to get calls from the Selective Service. That's
and that's what I mean. They're still doing things. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway. So, okay, where are we?
We're on number seven.
Number seven.
Okay. Seven, yep.
Man, come on. It out, will you? It's 10:15.
Okay, this is good. But you guys are supposed to have some stories and stuff to tell about this, too, because I'm not the only one with these stories. All right. As we get closer to the top, it does get much more serious.
Okay.
And we start running into some serious problems if you get too close to the top. Are you talking about how great your last job was? Are you on the job? I met somebody this weekend who was telling me he's been fired so many times. And one of the signs for him that he's been in the job too long is because he started reflecting on how great his previous job was that he had also been fired from. But his previous job was a lot more fun than this one. If you're spending too much time thinking about the good old days, perhaps you've been in the job too long.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Well, let me
tell
you.
It never happened to me, but it does make sense.
Okay, yeah. The good old days, but the good old days might have been when you had a job that, and maybe you didn't have as much responsibility as you do on the current job. You know, because as one ages and progresses, the pressure gets greater, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So you might remember the good old days where you could take a two-hour lunch or you could take an early Friday off.
But you should be, if you really are enjoying your job and you're good at it, your best days are here and ahead. Not necessarily in your past. I can remember when I moved to Washington, I moved here from Missouri, and one of my colleagues at our sister radio station here, one of my colleagues I worked with told me, Nan, you know, you have to realize that we've got New York and the burbs, and Missouri's way out in the burbs. Well, it was his way of telling me I was spending too much time talking about the places I'd been back in Missouri, and I wasn't spending enough time, you know, it wasn't of interest. We've all heard the thing that all news is local. I wasn't spending enough time talking about all the great things here in D.C. and the East Coast. I was spending too much time living in my past. So they corrected it very quickly for me. And I was just doing it because I had just moved here. If you're doing it because you honestly think your better days were behind you, it's not a good sign. It really isn't. You should be looking for things to develop in the job you're in right now and make this a more enjoyable job.
Do you find that as one progresses, they get more focused in an area? When we start out, we're all kind of general and we do things, and then maybe we shine in one area and we're not as shining in other areas, and we get promoted based on our ability to shine in the one area.
It's a real problem in the government because a lot of people face, let me use one example. A lot of people are not good at supervising. I know this comes as a shock in the government But in the private sector, you know, people aren't promoted into supervisory jobs if that's not the direction they want to go. In the government, it's kind of to move up, you have to at some point. Many people have to take supervisory positions. They don't like it. They're not necessarily good at it. It's one of those cases where I would look for a job if I'm being put into a position where I'm doing too much of the stuff that I'm not necessarily good at. I would look for a comparable job with the salary and step that is still doing the things I like to do. It may be a bigger organization than the one that you're in right now or a bigger office, but doing the things that you like to do and trying to minimize what you don't.
But if you do the things you like to do, do you run out of pay scale? I mean, I like doing this, but this doesn't pay as much as I need to make.
Well,
and in order for me to get to what I need to make, I might have to take a supervisory position where I'm doing less of what I like and more of what I don't like.
We're getting into that entire thing of what do you want out of your job? What do you want out of your life? What do you want to negotiate?
Oh, my
so,
goodness.
But, I mean, for example, you can be doing a type of work in one office. Say it's IT work. And you get to a point where it says, well, in this office, I have to start supervising others. Or you can move to a bigger IT operation and make the salary that you might be supervising IT people in a smaller operation. Does that make sense?
Anytime.
So it means that you can move into a bigger operation and do the work that you enjoy doing without necessarily doing the work you don't.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So number six, there is increased conflict with your colleagues. You are now settling into a hostile work environment. Now, often in the federal government, if a boss comes in and this is a rotational basis, say like you have in the Foreign Service at the State Department, somebody comes in for a couple, 3, even 4 years, often the people in that office will say, hey, I'll just wait them out. They'll eventually go away and I'll still be here. But if you are suddenly having a lot of hostility around you and it all seems to be centering around you, and other people seem to be getting along with each other, but they might be ganging up on you, it might be time to look in the mirror. It might be time to say, what am I projecting that is creating a hostile work environment, not only for me, but for my colleagues as well?
Good. Now, let's just take a quick tangent on this for those that might be listening from the Foreign Service or the Department of State. In the green room prior to going on air, and Ann was telling me about where she saw kind of the top 10 places that recent college graduates would want to work.
Actually, I was listening to WTOP on my way in this morning, and they were saying, where do college graduates want to work? And the top three were, first and foremost, college kids want to work at Google. Secondly, they were saying Microsoft, I believe. Third was Disneyland. And fourth was the State Department. And so I thought that was interesting. Then they talked about other government agencies that college kids are intrigued by. NASA was on the list. I believe NOAA was on the list. But they talked about places that college kids want to come, which is always where the future is. I mean, everybody is always looking back to saying, where do these kids want to go and why? And I was impressed to see that in the top five, there was at least one federal agency.
Yeah, and I would recommend when you're looking for a federal job or any job, but we're on federal jobs, is you pick a mission, an agency whose mission would interest you. Yeah, if you're coming out of school, chances are you haven't done anything NOAA does or NASA does or whatever, but they'll, you know, if you have the right educational skills and they'll train you, you'll learn. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in the mission going in, it makes a huge difference. I wouldn't just drift into the government or drift into a field and let, you know, sort of the occupation choose you.
Well, one of the things about federal agencies, and we've all been at a variety of them, I started with the National Park Service when I was in college. I worked as a tour guide at the Arch in St. Louis. An extremely different culture than working, say, with the Secret Service or working with the State Department or working with NOAA or, you know, all of these agencies are very different. You've got to find a culture that is a right match for the type of operation that you want to work for. People get the idea that the federal government is one employer.
Right.
One federal agency isn't one employer. When I do contracting with a federal agency, I may work with six different departments. It's like working for six different companies. It may fall under one umbrella. But you want to find something that's a good match.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's not the government isn't one monolithic block. I mean, they're working at the Department of Interior is going to appeal to some people because they have sort of a benign mission. And I heard that from a colleague while I was at Department of Interior. I like it because I like what we do. Rather than he wouldn't have been happy at the Department of Defense or some of the more.
I have a good friend at the IRS. It's not for everybody. Oh, yeah. I have other friends that have worked at the EPA. Not for everybody. You have to find something whose mission and the environment is a good match for you.
John, you work for how many different agencies?
I think it was 7, but yeah. I used to know, but I've sort of forgotten.
But it's about that. And you know? As I remember, it was fairly broad. You work for law enforcement agency, if I'm not mistaken?
Two, yeah. Actually. My last two.
And you work for OPM?
OPM was, that very was diverse, by yeah. far the longest. That was half my career was at OPM. But I worked for DOD for a while. I worked for, of all places, the first job I ever had in Chicago. It was in Chicago, where they were headquarters, the Railroad Retirement Board, of all places.
Hmm.
There's a mission I didn't care for. But and by the way, even when I was there, they were talking about closing the agency down and merging it in the function with Social Security. It's still there.
Yeah. Well, and I worked with FEMA, which with Federal Emergency Management Agency, was both the best and the worst job I ever had. The best job because I loved what I did and I loved running the radio operation there. The worst because I had five supervisors. You talk about a challenging job. You know, five supervisors can be a real challenge. So, yeah.
Oftentimes one.
Yes,
is a challenge.
That can be. Well, you want to skip to number five on the list then.
If we've done six, we might as well go to five.
We have done six, so number five. I know that neither of you would relate to this, but you need an increasing number of mental health days. You say, I just can't get up for work today. I just need a day off.
Yeah, I say that, but it doesn't do any good.
Well, Bob, your problem is when you run the company, you just don't have that option. But it's if you're getting to the point where you just say, I need a mental health day. We often need mental health days when we get a day like Friday that was so beautiful and the weather's in the 70s and we've had a long winter. That's different. If you're getting to the point where once a week you're saying, I need a mental health day, it's time to perhaps take a look at if you need to make a change.
Okay. You agree with that, John?
Yes, I absolutely do. It's certainly an indication you need to make a change. I didn't take too many, if any, that I recall, mental health days. But boy, I was glad every time I got more vacation time when I went from, let's say, 4 hours of pay period to six and then ultimately 8 hours. Yeah, I was glad to have the vacation time available to me.
8 hours, we need 4 weeks a year?
Five. And you attain that 15 years after you start your career. So...
Bob's getting jealous.
My father, when he was in private industry, he worked for this one company and eventually retired from it for 25 years. He had 5 weeks.
Did he use it?
Yeah, I think so. Uh-huh. I don't know. I wasn't at home, but I don't know what he was doing.
Anyway, we're good. I like listening to y'all.
You can get five. 5 weeks in the private sector, not right away. Well, in the government, you got 2.5 weeks for 3 years, then you went to 4 for the next 12, and then you got to 5 weeks.
So. Of course, when you work overseas and you start getting the same holidays in the country you're in, plus your holidays, and you start getting up to 2 months of vacation a year, I mean, that's not a bad thing.
No. So, Nan.
Yes.
We haven't covered, of course, all the 10, but we're midway through plus... So here's the question. When you get to this, why don't people look for new jobs?
Well, the real issue is that people fear change. And particularly, I am not casting aspersions on all federal employees, but they go into the federal government not to have to deal with as much change. They want to be confident that their job is going to be at the same place when they get there the next day, the next week, the next year. However, we do tend to overstay our welcome. Do you know that in the private sector, I believe I've said this on this program before, somebody graduating from college today is expected to change jobs a dozen times and change careers 3 times. That's in the private sector. How many government workers do you know that do that? They don't change careers until they perhaps retire in most cases, that they change careers. So what you're saying is that these are people who tend to like the consistency of what they have in their job. The point is, staying in one job doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. A lot of people are constantly moving within the government, and sometimes a new desk, you know, a new view out the window, these types of things can be good for us. Coping with change is not a bad thing, but it is something that a lot of people tend to be resistant. It's the devil they know versus the unknown. If I move to a new office, am I going to have to meet new people? Am I going to have to get used to new things? You know, what is going to happen if I go to this new office? It's the devil you know. So a lot of people will stay in that job far beyond a point that's healthy for them because they fear the unknown.
In your career coaching, counseling,
mm-hmm.
let's say you're dealing with somebody 55 or older that has this desire but just doesn't want to jump off the end of the diving board yet. How do you get them to jump rather than being pushed?
Well, the other thing is that when they've got a job, it may be easier to find a job when you're employed, but it's not easier to look for a job when you're employed. I mean, you think you've got all these things you have to do in your 8-hour day. it's starting to change your focus. It's starting to look ahead. And we deal with it, Bob, quite frankly, in the retirement seminars when people are retiring out of the government. If it's 5 years down the road, they're thinking, oh, I'm not thinking about that yet. The people that are really going to succeed during that transition are the ones that are saying, yeah, you know, I've got my second half of my life to live. So I'm going to have to start thinking about this now and what I want to do for the second half of my life, which isn't going to be sitting in a rocking chair, most likely. So it's getting people to shift that focus and say, okay, I'm going to spend a certain amount of time each day looking forward. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do 5 years from now? What am I going to do a year from now? Trying to get them to release what it is they're doing right now and keeping all of their attention and energy in that and thinking about where they want to go. That's the toughest thing.
I have an interesting, this really did happen. It was, unfortunately, at a funeral. Mm-hmm. And it was a person that we, this other person and I used to work with, and we were talking after. I said, what are you doing? You know, how do you like it? And there was a little bit, wasn't thoroughly pleased. And I said, could we talk another time than today? And fortunately, she came to work. And fabulous.
Yeah.
And, but we had worked many, many, many years ago. So what I'm trying to say is that happened that way. But sometimes if somebody's asking you something at a social event, you know, how do you like your job? And you were say, yeah, I really do, but.
It's the but. And it's the, oh, let me tell you. And they start rolling their eyes. If you can't be enthusiastic with others about your job, you really should be thinking and taking a look at, what do I need to change? Do I need to change me in this job, or do I need to move on to something else? And the biggest thing I get, Bob, are people that say, but I don't know what else I want to do. The first step is being open to other possibilities. And you would be amazed at the options that come your way once you're open to something.
Do you find in counseling folks that it isn't always employment, that they maybe are close to retirement or they could retire and you could do this on your own in business? Do you get people jumping off the dock to get to the boat?
Oh, I get a lot of people that want to start doing business on their own and starting their own business after hours and during their annual leave time and things like that while they're still employed. And as long as it's not a conflict of interest with the current job you're working on, it's absolutely fine. But a lot of people start putting the toe in the water and start planning for it. There was a gentleman that was starting his own business during one of your seminars, came up to me and I said, when did you start preparing? He said, 5 years ago. And he was just preparing for his retirement at that point. He had everything was in place for him. So he had started thinking about it before he was retiring. But a lot of times I have to tell people, don't wait for your retirement to change jobs. There are lots of jobs that you'll be a better fit for. And the other thing is, we haven't even touched on this, but people outgrow jobs. You may go into a job and say, okay, I'm great at this job, but you may outgrow it. It's time for you to find something else. But there's the comfort of, but I know this job. I have to learn a new one. That's all. You know, that's what keeps us sharp and energetic and enjoying the things we do around us. Believe it or not, learning something new can be an energizing
thing.
That's
somewhat how John and I met. Not that he was unhappy with where he was, but you know, he had worked for the government. And we were talking at one point, would you like to work with us?
And, yeah, but I was already retired.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I was working for somebody else.
Yeah, and yeah, the somebody else I particularly like, he's a competitor,
yeah.
But it just worked better because we were in the same city.
Right.
And it was one of the better days that I can remember.
For me as well, yes. Yeah. It was a nice change for me because, I won't get into the details, but it was just a nice change.
We're pointing out that doing new things can be a fun thing. And I'll use an example of something I've just launched. I've been doing a little bit of substitute teaching out at the elementary schools in Fairfax County. And we had a runaway hamster at Fort Belvoir that was constantly escaping. So I wrote a children's book. Have I written a children's book before? No. I'm a writer. I've been a broadcaster. But I've got to tell you, it has energized me in ways that I haven't been in years. So doing new things can be fun and exciting. And, you know, I'm learning a little bit now about the children's book publishing world. So it, I just want people to challenge themselves to do new things.
I have a great example of what you're just talking about. There was a guy, grew up in Liverpool, England. He was one of those evacuees, children evacuated during World War II. He was 6 when they evacuated him. He was 12 by the time the war ended. And then later in life, he didn't have an education. He was from a poor family. He started a wholesale clothing business and was pretty successful at it. Finally retired to Williamsburg, Virginia, where his daughter and granddaughter lived. But he ended up writing a book about his experiences as a child during World War II, living with various families in Wales after he was evacuated and separated from both his mother and father. His father was in the military in World War II. So he separated from his family for 6 years. And now the publisher has asked him to write a second book, picking up with 1945 onward. And I read his first book, and it's really good. And I'll give it a plug because it's well worth reading. It's Before the Last All Clear, meaning, you know, the sirens saying you could come out of your bomb shelters. But it's really a good book, but that's a perfect example of what you're... Right. He told me, I saw him last week, he told me the other day that he would have never dreamed he would write a book.
No. And I would have, as much as I've written a lot of books and contributed to books, I never thought I'd write a children's book. And I do actually the substitute teaching because I enjoy being around kids. And it just kind of gives me an opportunity to keep my creative, that side of my life going. So it wasn't anything that I set out to do. But when you have when all the kids have all these stories about what happens after school, I thought, well, seeing it through the eyes of a hamster would be a fun thing. So a lot of things that for the fun side of my life that I've had in working with these kids is all coming out now in these children's books. And it will be a series. And it's a lot of fun. So do something in the job. Find things in the job. I'm not saying everybody can write children's books on the job. But I'm saying you may be doing your job. And when opportunities present themselves, don't close your eyes to them.
Could I write a book for children on what to do to become an accountant? I don't think it would hit the bestseller.
Well, it might if you say, if you teach kids, you know, how to start saving money, you know, and I could think of 100 ways that you could start, considering I've been working with kindergarten and first graders on the difference between pennies and quarters, and they all think they're worth $100, by the way.
I work with kindergartners, but they were 30 years old. Anyway.
Okay.
Not currently, by the way.
We are getting off topic.
Let's come back to number whatever it was. What are we, number 4 now or 5?
Did you want to give a phone number again, just in case, now that we're hitting the top 4?
Okay, 202-465-3080. A prompt from a prior radio person, 202-465-3080. We're on for about another 20 minutes. After that, you can email us at 4FOR, your benefit.
All one word.
All one word, at NITPINC.com. For your benefit, at NITPINC.com. What is NITPINC? Well, the INC is, of course, Inc., as in incorporated. NITP is the name of the company that provides this weekly
show. What
does
NITP stand for?
Oh, my goodness. It is just, I could tell you a story, but I would cut into time. But it stands for the National Institute of Transition Planning. I'll do it real fast. The company was started, and this sounds like a bad joke, by a priest, a stockbroker, and an accountant. The priest wanted transition. The stockbroker had an ego issue, wanted national. I could care less, so I said, let's do planning. And that's how it got its name.
You know, we all get thrust into these business ventures for a variety of reasons. Again, Bob, it's being open to it, right?
Right. And I just, whatever you all want.
Okay.
One is no longer with us. The other one's long since retired. And I, you know, Google him and call him on occasion. He's in, I won't say where he is, but he's still doing his priest work in another state, and he was a fine person. Anyway,
okay. Now, a fine person. As we go into the top 4, if you've got anything else that you're thinking should be on this list, or If callers have stories of their own, they certainly are welcome to call in and contribute to this. This is a list that I'm getting from the exposure I've had with clients and over the years. And this has been, I've been doing the transition work now for over 15 years. And these are some of the things that I've been able to identify over the years. The fourth one is that if you are spending all your off hours talking and thinking about work, it might be a bad sign. If all you're doing is fretting and venting and everybody around you, so if you've got family members out there that you're thinking all they're doing is talking to me about work constantly, there's something wrong here, they're just, you know, they're not happy in their jobs. I always say that the only person that you should be venting on is your spouse, and you better be careful how much of that you vent on, or your significant other, or in my case, the dog. You can only vent so much before they get tired of it, too. But if you find yourself taking it out on everybody around you and you're thinking about work constantly and that commute is becoming anxiety driven and you're becoming an aggressive driver because all you're thinking about is work, you know, how much time are you spending off the job thinking about the job? If it's too much, you might be, it might be a sign you should be moving on.
May I mention something I noticed Saturday night?
Yes.
It was with John's wife, Beth. She had a glow about her that I had not seen in prior parties.
Yeah, we should add a little background because she retired about a year ago, and this was at the annual NITP party. Always something we look forward to. It was always a lot of fun, as it was Saturday night. So, yeah, she has been retired a year ago this month, and she's enjoying it. What Nan just touched upon about the commute, that was one of the things that was really getting to her. And we don't live terribly far out, relatively speaking, from the district where she was working, but it was getting to her. That wasn't the only reason she retired, but she'd finally just had enough. The one thing she did miss about work and still does a little bit, although she sees her former colleagues, is her former colleagues. So, you know, that can, but you can still arrange to meet them.
And those relationships have changed, and she has to accept that, yes, those relationships change.
I guess, and over time it will change even more, because as you get more degrees of separation, maybe that, you know, does change even more over time. But, yeah, I guess she's has no complaints, at least that I've heard.
Well, if you've got, and I encourage people that might be listening too, if you've got people in your life that really are starting to get on your nerves with all their complaints about their jobs, it might be good for you to talk to them offline privately and say, what's going on with you? Because remember, that's going to be, I always try to leave people with something very positive about what I'm doing right now, because that's going to be my lasting impression. When I leave the room, people are going to say either Nan is doing great or Nan is not doing very well. And if I don't see them again for another year, they're going to think for the next year, Nan is not doing very well. So you should be having, you should have something positive to say to the people around you. However, what we tend to talk about is what we're obsessing over. And if we're obsessing over the job, if there are things going on, it tends to come out.
Okay.
Okay.
Number three?
Number three is, if you are becoming more imaginative about your reasons to take sick leave, or you're beginning to take sick leave because and going into arrears with your sick leave, you don't have something diagnosed, you don't have a diagnosed illness, but you find yourself going into even hundreds of hours of arrears and sick leave, it might be time to look for another job. I love some of the, there was a website a few months ago that said, these are the excuses people are now giving for taking sick leave. And there was something ridiculous, like there was a chicken in my yard, or, you know, ridiculous stuff that people were coming up with that they were calling in for sick leave. But frankly, I've seen a list of some of the government employees' reasons for calling in sick. Sometimes it's too much information. Sometimes they're trying too hard. But you look at those and you say, nope, you know, these aren't legitimate things. They're making up excuses. So if you find yourself really making up excuses to take that sick leave, or you're taking too much of it, it might be time to think about, am I staying too long?
Is there another sign? No, I'm private sector. I did work for the government a little bit. But on the private sector, if somebody was taking off early Friday and not showing up Monday, it was usually another issue.
Mm-hmm.
Great workers, but
yeah,
they had that sign.
Do you have the workers that have to actually miss a Wednesday, or are you having the ones that are sick over the weekends?
It's sick over the weekends, yeah, and carries into Monday.
Yep. Yeah. So that's definitely, and we're getting into the more serious signs now here at the top three. And it is something, if you are really finding yourself making up silly things that you're missing. By the way, if you do legitimately have a family emergency or a sickness or whatever, I found over the years being a manager myself that people don't always want all those details. So, if you are legitimately sick, you're sick. If you're not and you're finding yourself just feeling run down a lot, but you just can't put your finger on a diagnosis, it may be that the job is the issue for you.
Yeah, if another telltale sign, at least for me, was you didn't sleep as well.
Mm-hmm.
And,
don't jump to my top answer, John, because we're almost there.
Is that right?
Yeah, that'll come up in a few minutes.
I don't have a view of this list.
Okay.
So I'm sorry.
That's all right. But you're closing in on it. You're all expanding on exactly where we're going.
John is intuitive.
Well.
I'm clairvoyant.
That's
yes.
It.
Yes. Well, you're starting to think of the things that used to happen in your previous jobs.
But that was, of course, yes.
The second one is, and this has to do with both the private and public sector, both tend to do this. We in the United States tend to, for better or for worse, managers would like to see people quit or move on rather than have to start documenting or firing them. So frankly, they start making their life a little miserable. If you are finding that you are being isolated from the management team, that you're not getting information, that you're not being in meetings that other people are in and that you might have been in the past, if your colleagues or your bosses are starting to isolate you, that's reason number two to indicate as a sign that you might be in the job too long. Make sense?
A ton.
Sure.
Yep. Because that's their way of saying, well, we don't want him around. We don't want him around. We're going to start pushing him out. And if you are really starting to feel that isolation, that's an indication. Okay.
Okay. So you're smart enough to know that the isolation is there.
Oh, yeah. I get a lot of people that will say to me that, I was supposed to be in this meeting. They didn't let me in this meeting. My boss isn't talking to me. I'm sending him emails. He's not responding. My colleagues went to lunch without me. And, if you're starting to feel a little paranoid, there's a good chance that, it might be fact. It just might be fact. You have to look at it. Don't take everybody going out to lunch together or something like that as a sign that, oh, yeah, it's you. But if there's a pattern developing where you are being left out, it might be an indicator.
Okay.
Now, are we ready for the top of the list? We feel like we should have a gong or something.
Yeah, do we have a drum roll going?
I left the gong home. Pushed out of it. It was on the kitchen table. I meant to bring it, but.
Well, this is the number one indicator, and it's quite serious, but it's what John touched on just a moment ago. If you are feeling sick, you're having headaches, stomach aches, sleeplessness, anxiety, all of a sudden you are just not feeling well, and a lot of times people don't even know this sign until they leave a job. I have a client as recently as last week, and this is one of the biggest complaints I hear, by the way, when people are forced into a transition. A lot of times before there are layoffs in the private sector, there'll be a period of a lot of people will be unsettled, and there'll be a lot of pushing people to quit so they don't have to lay them off, and this type of stuff will happen. I had a client tell me last week, I really didn't know how much I hated what I was doing and how bad it was until I'm now healthy. And it wasn't anything she could put her finger on except for she's having headaches and she's not sleeping well at night and the anxiety is high and all of these things. That is the number one sign when you are getting physically ill over the job That's the number one sign that you should probably look at a change.
Wow.
It's a biggie. It's a biggie. And a lot of times we're so busy being the hamster in the wheel, we're running and running and running, we don't even have time to see what's happening around us. Sometimes it takes a step back and just catching your breath to say, what am I doing here?
Can I reverse positions for a second?
Sure.
Let's say I'm a friend and I notice this person that you describe here. How do I approach that person? Say, you know, you're a little bit more edgy than you used to be. You're not the same person. Are there work issues or are there health issues? And they could tell me.
And I actually have.
Take a hike. But how could we help that person?
I've actually talked to a couple of friends of mine about this in the past. One of the things you have to remember is that, first of all, and I think of one close friend of mine in particular, it has to be that person's decision. It can't be yours. You can offer support as a friend. If you've got a spouse to go that's going through it, you might want to push a little bit harder because you want them to be happy too. But if it's somebody that is a friend and you don't want to overstep, you know, you can say I'm supporting you and stuff, but you just seem to be a little bit more stressed than you used to be. Are things okay with the job? Do you want to talk? A lot of times, and frankly, this is a gender difference, women are much more willing to talk things out and to vent, and they need to, than men are. But to be a good friend, just say, is there anything I could do to help you? And if they jokingly say, find me another job, you might take it as more than a joke.
Where do you refer them? I mean, a lay person like myself, what would I say? Yeah, I got trouble with the job. And I go, are there publications? Are there Job Haters Anonymous clubs?
Well, there certainly are career counselors that, and I don't know a single one that's worth its salt that wouldn't talk to somebody on the phone and stuff to say, what is it you're dealing with? And they're not going to charge you for an initial, what is it you need or anything like that. Yes, if you start wanting to polish up your resume and do those types of things, they will. But I think that it's, you know, trying to find other ways to let that out, but to encourage change and to say, it might not be such a bad thing for you to find another job. What kind of job are you looking for? One of the things people tend to, when they really want to change jobs, one of the biggest concerns they have is my manager's going to find out. I don't want anybody in my office to know. Well, that really is opposite of what you need to do. You need to kind of spread the word that you're always open to opportunities, that you would be willing to look at another job. So it might be a case where if it's a friend of yours, you might say, well, you know, send me your resume. If I come across anything, you need to know what it is they're looking for. And you need to let them know that if the time is right for them. Before I left broadcasting, I actually spent 2 years talking to a lot of people, doing informational interviews. And you can talk to people that are in the business you're considering going into. In fact, I talked to a lot of career counselors saying, I'm going to consider being a career counselor. Can I talk to you? Very, very open, wonderful people. And so I spent all this time doing it. When I finally made the decision to leave, that weekend, I called several friends and family members. Universally, they said, it's about time.
All right, how about this? Let's say there's an old adage, if you want something done, give it to somebody busy. All right, so mm-hmm. Let's say that that person now is receiving more work than they can do. They really like what they do, but they do have this anxiety. They do wake up at night. They do become irritable. Can they approach their supervisor and say, listen, there's no more space in the garage?
Yeah. One of the things, and if you do love your job, one of the things you have to do is make sure that when you start saying there are things I can't get done in a given day, that the bottom of the list is the same bottom of the list for your boss. A lot of times we have employees that'll say, oh, you know, I didn't get to that. And the boss will say, that was the most important thing you needed to do today. Why didn't you get to that? You have to make sure that you and your boss are in sync on priorities. But find out what the priorities are and say, everything that you've given me, I might not get to the bottom of the list. What happens is, and I think of my sister years ago, she was taking work home with her because she was saying, I'm not getting it done at the office and it needs to get done. It's like, they're not paying you to do this paperwork and, you know, while you're at home with your kids. They're paying you to do it while you're on the job, so quit taking it home with you. You start a cycle where the boss expects you to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it if you start taking it with you. So make sure that your boss is aware of what you can accomplish in a given day.
What if they're rewarded for that, not necessarily on a per hour basis, but they get a bonus or they
that's the negotiation.
It comes with the territory.
That's the negotiation, Bob. We're talking about people that a lot of people, when they're on, they're hourly employees, they get paid for so many hours. And you have to understand that throwing in that extra 20 hours is not going to keep your federal agency afloat. You've got to make sure that you've got a reality check that's saying, I am doing what, you know, to the best of my ability. And you have to do that. If you find that you're spending too much time, though, not doing what you're supposed to be doing at work, that's, as I said early on, that's one of the early warning signs that you might need to change
Barbara
jobs.
Bush, the former first lady, said, you know, when you're on your deathbed, you're not going to say, reflect back how many hours you spent at the office.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to reflect on the good times. And that's very true.
We do have to understand in our culture that we do work to live, not live to work. You know, too many people are identifying themselves. Their identity is tied to the job I do. No, you are the person you are, and you're supposed to be using that job to make the money to live the life that you want to live. And if that the opposite is occurring and you are now living to go to work, no, you've got to get your priorities organized and talk to people that will help you better prioritize.
Well, well put. We have a priority of a minute and a half. So,
well, we did promise an email address, so I do want to give that if
please
you don't mind.
So.
It's Nan, N-A-N, at Breakers Consulting. That's where the breakersconsulting.com comes in. All one word. So if you have any questions, follow up, anything else you want to tell me about the stories that you are facing, I always love to hear them. I'm always looking for new material.
And Breakers with an S, right?
Breakers with an S. I have no idea where Breaker goes to, but Breakers with an S.
It doesn't go to you, I can tell you that.
No, breakersconsulting.com.
John?
Yeah, if you're unhappy in your job, it'll spill over into the rest of your life. And the unhappier you are in your job, the unhappier the rest of your life will be. And so then, yes, to echo Nan, it's time to look to get out.
Yeah. Saturday night for me, this is NITP's annual party. I just walk out of there and I go, why don't I do more of this? I mean, everybody's happy. And
we could do two a year.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next Monday. And I believe we're talking about taxes. If it's not next Monday, it's the Monday after. You know, for the filers, something about April 18th this year. Unless you're in Virginia, then it's April 15th if you had to file otherwise on April 15th. But anyway, that's more later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
As gas prices rise, more focus will shift toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join FCA Bethesda and FCA Energy on May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy in the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, and